It is Monday, June the 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Thanks for joining us. Coming up, the plight of disparate Iraqi refugees in Fallujah.
They've been eating rotting expired dates and drinking from the river, which is unfit for drinking, and now they are finding themselves out there, and we are unable to cope and to help everyone.
Egypt Air's black boxes, the debate over gun control in the U.S., plus the Dalai Lama dedicating a Buddhist temple. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi has declared the Iraqi forces victorious in their fight for Fallujah. But in that city, Iraqi fighters still face snipers and bombs as they try to eliminate the Islamic State militants from that city that they've held for more than 2 years. Some militants reportedly have sent their wives and children out of the city with refugees, and all reports are indicating the refugees from Fallujah are exhausted, they're hungry, and they're desperate. The Norwegian Refugee Council is one of the groups providing emergency help. VOA's Victor Beatty speaks with Carl Shembri of the NRC, who is in Baghdad, not far from Fallujah.
We have seen a tidal wave of displacement just over the last 3 days of more than 30,000 people fleeing from the city center of Fallujah, which was under a tight grip of the ISIS fighters. Previous to that, over the last 4 weeks during the operation to retake Fallujah, we've seen another 32,000 people fleeing from Fallujah. So it is, I would say, a tsunami of displacement that is overwhelming the humanitarian agencies working there, including the Norwegian Refugee Council, and everyone who is trying to help these people. Our staff are there on the ground trying to keep up with the needs, providing water, food, shelter, and basic items like mattresses. But we're running out of stocks, we're running out of funding, and we're seeing, I myself have just been to the camps, and I've seen some of the most vulnerable people, people with disabilities, pregnant women, children, out there in the scorching heat, up to 50 degrees Celsius, and totally exhausted, walking for long hours just to reach the safety of our displacement camps. They are practically fleeing from one disaster zone and entering into another.
What are they telling you about the fighting?
A lot of the people have seen and witnessed untold atrocities, tragedies. They've been dodging sniper fire. There have been explosive devices along the way. Most of them have also been injured, killed. They've witnessed their relatives even drowning in the Euphrates River, trying to flee to safety. Now we are relieved to see these thousands who have arrived to safety, but we are extremely concerned about their fate if the funding doesn't materialize and the Iraqi authorities and the United Nations do not step in and take the leadership and management that is needed so that this crisis is actually averted. It is completely unacceptable that these people are fleeing from this disaster. 2 years under ISIS control, 6 months under extreme siege where all the basic supplies were cut off, food and water. They've been eating rotting expired dates and drinking from the river, which is unfit for drinking. And now they are finding themselves out there, and we are unable to cope and to help everyone.
Do they tell you that a lot of civilians have been killed in the fighting? And we also understand more than 80,000 have fled since the offensive began last month.
We do not have the exact figures of how many people have been killed. The city center of Fallujah remains unapproachable. There is still fighting going on. There are all sorts of explosives and booby traps and landmines that make it impossible even for these families to return anytime soon. We know there is destruction, houses have been destroyed, and it is an extremely dangerous scenario. But we also know that people have been killed in the fighting, caught in the crossfire. And we know also that people have been targeted, civilians have been targeted either while they were trying to flee or because they just got caught in the crossfire and got killed. And it is of extreme concern. But now we have to focus on these thousands who have managed to come to safety, to the camps where we are working. And it is now, it falls on the international community, international donors, not to abandon them. Iraqis have been left out in the cold for way too long, and it is now the moment of truth.
Carl Schembri of the Norwegian Refugee Council speaking from Baghdad with VOA's Victor Beatty. Investigators have begun analyzing the two severely damaged black boxes from an Egypt Air plane that crashed into the Mediterranean last month, killing all 66 people on board. VOA asked air safety expert Todd Curtis of airsafe.com what might have caused the data recorders to become damaged.
Well, they are damage resistant. They aren't damage proof. And it's possible they can be damaged in any number of ways, from extreme forces from an in-flight breakup, extreme forces from an impact on water, through an in-flight fire. It wasn't clear from the initial reports whether it was fire damage or physical damage or some combination thereof. But be that the case, if the Egyptian authorities who are responsible for the investigation aren't able to properly read out the data, they may use the resources of primarily the French authorities, who have ample experience with dealing with damage flight data recorders and cockpit voice recorders.
We asked Curtis if he is optimistic at all information might be extracted from those black boxes.
Well, that would depend on the nature of the damage. If we have a situation, or if they have a situation, where the damage is limited to the input and output devices that are on the electronic boards or on the other parts of the device, then simply hooking it up to a different device may be sufficient. If the actual memory chips that hold the data are damaged to some extent, that may be more problematic. And again, that may call on the resources, they may have to call on the resources of the French authorities who are a part of the official investigation, or the original manufacturer of those devices.
And if information can be extracted, what might it tell the investigators?
As you may know, the cockpit voice recorder can record up to 2 hours of voice data from inside the cockpit, which would also include conversations that were not included in the air traffic control conversations, which have been played back earlier by other news sources. And the really important piece of source of information is the flight data recorder, which can record up to 25 hours of data. So not only will the entire flight, the accident flight, be recorded, but potentially several flight legs before that. So if it turns out there was some sort of subtle system problem, it may have manifested itself in some way on flights previous to the accident flight.
Todd Curtis is an air safety expert with airsafe.com. Egypt's Aircraft Accident Investigation Committee told Reuters on Sunday the committee had started the analysis of the devices with representatives from France and the United States, which are critical to explaining why the Airbus A320 crashed on May 19th on a flight from Paris to Cairo. The Egypt Air crash is the third blow since last year to Egypt's travel industry. A Russian plane crashed into the Sinai Peninsula in October, killing all 224 people on board in an attack claimed by the Islamic State. And in March, an Egypt Air plane was hijacked by a man wearing a fake suicide belt. No one was hurt. And among the top stories we're following on The Voice of America, Russia's president supportive of American proposals for Syria, Rome electing its first woman mayor, plus Nigeria's president returning after health treatment in Britain. We have expanded coverage of those stories, plus a lot more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. One week after the deadly mass shooting at a gay nightclub in the U.S. city of Orlando, Florida, which left 49 people dead, lawmakers here in Washington are expected to vote on a series of proposals to block gun sales to terror suspects and expand screening of people buying firearms in the United States. Lawmakers from both major political parties agree the issue must be addressed, but the approach to solutions come from very different views on the subject and different interpretations of the U.S. Constitution. To help define how Congress will deal with the legislation this week, International Edition's Jim Stevenson speaks with VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman.
Jim, we are about 24 hours away from the first meaningful votes that will be in Congress for quite some time on the issue of gun control. And this comes after last Sunday's devastating mass shooting in Orlando that killed 49 people and left more than 50 others wounded. The shooter appears to have been inspired by Islamic State, but this has rekindled what has been a periodic debate after each and every mass shooting in the United States, and there have been quite a few in recent years, and that is, what, if anything, should Congress do to stop the flow of guns in America, and specifically those guns that are used for mostly military purposes?
There's been a lot of accusations of politicizing this event and posturing. How is Congress approaching this legislation, and what are they trying to accomplish?
Well, that depends on which side of the aisle you look to. Democrats mounted essentially a takeover of the Senate floor last week. It looked like a filibuster, but it really wasn't, because filibusters are used to block legislation. This was a matter of Democrats commandeering the Senate floor, demanding action. So in a sense, it was the anti-filibuster filibuster. And they held court for about 15 hours, preventing anything else from getting done until Republicans agreed to hold votes on a series of measures pertaining to gun control. One would be linking the no-fly list to a no-buy list. In other words, if you are not cleared to fly from any U.S. airport because you are suspected of some sort of terrorist connection, that ergo you should not be able to walk into a gun store and buy a weapon. Another proposal that's going to be getting a vote late Monday concerns expanding background checks. Right now, if you go to a gun store, you are subjected to a background check. In other words, they want to know if you have a criminal record. However, if you go to a gun show, the sort of freewheeling events where people can buy and sell guns pretty much underneath the government's radar, no one is subjected to a background check. Same for internet sales, by and large. So this would expand background checks. And Democrats don't really believe that either of these proposals that they have are going to get the votes to pass in the Senate. And even if it did, House Speaker Paul Ryan has already indicated that the likelihood of them being brought up on the House floor is dim indeed. Republicans are looking at this as a terrorism, as sort of a national security issue. How do we prevent Islamic State from getting its message into America and infecting the minds of Americans? Democrats look at this as a gun control issue, and it's sort of a Rorschach test for how you want to look at this particular issue in America.
With your sights squarely on the subject, as always, we appreciate your comments. Michael Bowman, VOA Senate correspondent.
Thank you, Jim.
Many thanks, gentlemen. And as Americans continue to mourn the mass shooting in Orlando, Florida, as we've been reporting, left 49 dead, dozens more wounded, International Edition social media expert G. Abby Lee is here to tell us about how the entertainment industry is honoring the victims there. Hi, G.
Hi, Steve. Many celebrities have offered their condolences to the Orlando shooting victims across the country, but it seems like foreign celebrities are also deeply affected by the tragedy. J.K. Rowling, who is the author of the popular Harry Potter series, sent flowers to one of the victims' funeral. That funeral was for Luis Vielma, who used to work at a Harry Potter ride inside the Universal Orlando Resort. She sent a card with the flowers and reportedly wrote, "To Luis, who died for love. you will never be forgotten. That news is going viral on the internet, but she hasn't tweeted about it herself. Across Twitter and Facebook, people are writing Rowling is a class act and that she treats her fans with love and devotion.
No doubt that's a class act. What other celebrities are tweeting about the victims?
Another UK celebrity who honored the victims is singer Adele. She wore a rainbow flag while performing in honor of the victims in Belgium this weekend. Here in America, pop singer Christina Aguilera is doing a lot more than just talking about it. She released a song titled Change that's dedicated to the 49 people killed in the shooting. She has been promoting it nonstop on Facebook and Twitter throughout the weekend, and she shared a statement on her Facebook page. She explained the meaning behind the title and said she wants to be part of the change this world needs to be more inclusive and diverse. She also tweeted, "Love conquers hate. Proceeds from Apple Music US downloads of Change will benefit @compassion_fund for 3 months." She's referring to the National Compassion Fund, which is a website you can use to donate directly to victims of mass shooting or terrorist attacks. Steve?
Many thanks to you, G. International Edition's G. Abby Lee. As you might imagine, G is on Twitter. You can find her at G. Abby Lee. I'm there as well at VOA Norman. And you can find our program, International Edition, on Twitter at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on the Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA. A leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Salih, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Salih saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Now, U.S. politics, where Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican Party presidential nominee, is complaining that some Republicans are trying to thwart the official declaration of his nomination at next month's National Party Nomination Convention.
We've been having a good time, thank you. We're going to win very, very big in November, that I can tell you.
Some delegates to the convention in Cleveland, Ohio, say they want to change the party's rules to allow delegates to vote for someone other than Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump's opponents say he does not represent the Republicans' traditional conservative policy positions and that his comments about women, Muslims, and Mexicans make him unacceptable as a Republican standard bearer. Latest polls are indicating that Trump would lose to the presumptive Democratic Party presidential nominee Hillary Clinton if the election were held today rather than in November.
We don't forget. It was a very important day because I went there, I said, who's going to show up? And the place was packed, okay? And it was.
You can always get a lot about the VOA on VOA's website about the U.S. election. There's a spot there, voanews.com. Also in the news, the Vietnamese community in Southern California hosted the Dalai Lama over the weekend. Exciting time. Exiled Tibetan spiritual leader there to dedicate a major Buddhist temple in an immigrant neighborhood known as Little Saigon. VOA's Michael Sullivan was there.
Religious teaching and the grand opening of the Dieu Nu Temple drew thousands of Vietnamese immigrants, Buddhists, and others who support the Dalai Lama.
Well, just to be in the presence of the Dalai Lama is a wonderful thing, so I came to get that wonderful thing.
Many came to hear the Dalai Lama's teaching on compassion.
Well, I've loved, you know, Dalai Lama. I think that he's such a wise man, and he represents such great you know, knowledge and everything that I've always wanted.
This temple was started in a house in 2008 by a Vietnamese who had left their native land to seek religious freedom in the United States. Monks and temple members have spearheaded the drive for this new $6 million structure.
I remember when we started building this, our monk's biggest dream was to have the Dalai Lama come and talk, and it's happening. And, you know, good things come to really good people, and this is it. This is it right here.
The Dalai Lama draws interest from non-Asians.
I was raised by parents who traveled the world and a Vietnam vet father that didn't know where home was anymore, and there was something with Buddhist philosophy and the Dalai Lama's message, and in general, humanitarianism and peace.
Buddhists from many traditions came to Little Saigon, and a Czech visitor who embraces their teachings.
Because I'm interested about 3 years, and I want to see him, you know, I hope, because there's a lot of people today.
The overflow crowd of thousands could at least catch a glimpse of the respected visitor, a thrill for Buddhists.
Because I think he's one of the most well-known Buddhists in the world today.
Vietnamese Americans say the Dalai Lama brought a moving religious message and drew attention to an important Buddhist community and its imposing new temple. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Westminster, California.
And for more on the Dalai Lama's visit to California and more on world news, check out our website at voanews.com. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers say they have spotted some of the oldest oxygen in the universe. Using the European Southern Observatory's AMA array of radio telescopes, the scientists say they've picked up a strong signal that indicates oxygen in a galaxy about 13 billion light years away. Now, this means that the oxygen formed no later than some 700 million years after the Big Bang, the theoretical beginning of our universe. The scientists found the ancient oxygen in a distant galaxy in the constellation Cetus. They say their findings provide new insight into the early universe and how its earliest stars were formed. Keep in mind that immediately after the Big Bang, the only elements in the universe were hydrogen, helium, and lithium. Elements any heavier than those, including oxygen, didn't appear until after stars had formed. That's today's Science in a Minute. I'm Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. Many people are still coming to grips with that mass shooting at the nightclub in Orlando, Florida, including those in the world of country music. Nikki Strong of VOA Music joins International Edition's Sarah Williams to talk about the various ways that country artists are using their medium to help the communities directly impacted by that tragic event.
Nikki, so how has the country music community responded to the Orlando mass shooting?
Well, of course, Sarah, first there was a tremendous outpouring of emotion on social media from so many artists, including Brad Paisley, Casey Musgraves, Tim McGraw, Blake Shelton. A lot of people expressing shock, sadness, anger, remorse, condolences, calls for prayer, calls to end violence. Many artists have paid tribute to the victims and their families as well, such as Luke Bryan having a moment of silence at his performance at the Country Music Association Festival that was happening, or the CMA Fest. Little Big Town and the Dixie Chicks also performed songs in their respective shows in dedication to those who were impacted.
Well, there's also a benefit concert happening in Orlando as well.
Yes, yes. Many artists are now teaming up with a local radio station and several other media outlets for a very special event called Orlando's Night of Healing and Country Music, or AKA K92.3's Country Strong. It'll take place Tuesday, June 21st at CFE Arena on the campus of the University of Central Florida. Artists thus far on the lineup include Tyler Farr, Maddie and Tay, Easton Corbin, Cole Swindell, Billy Currington, Kanan Smith, and Michael Ray. There's still more being added even as we speak.
Which organization will benefit from the concert?
So proceeds from the ticket sales and parking, which I think is cool, will be donated to the One Orlando Fund, which was created by the Orlando mayor, Buddy Dyer. And he says the purpose of the fund is to provide a way to help respond to the needs of, he says, quote, our community community now as well as in the future. So the money raised for the fund will be funneled to nonprofit organizations serving victims and their families, Hispanic, LGBTQ, and faith groups, and other impacted communities as well. But in general, I just feel like country music really does have a history of stepping up to make a difference in the lives of others. And I think this concert is just another example. And for more information, if people want to check it out and see if they could possibly go, they can go to K923Orlando.com.
Well, you can find out more about country music's altruistic efforts in the community, as well as music from the artists themselves, on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. For questions or comments, you can reach Nikki at VOA Music on Facebook and VOA underscore music on Twitter. Thanks very much, Nikki.
You're welcome.
So keep
the sounds of Maddie and Tay. Now we turn to U.S. professional basketball, where the Cleveland Cavaliers forward LeBron James was named the most valuable player of the NBA Finals following his team's 93-89 championship win over the Golden State Warriors Sunday night. For James, who was the catalyst behind the Cavs' remarkable rally from a 3-1 series deficit, the win marks the third time he's captured the award after winning it with the Miami Heat back in 2012 and in 2013. Thanks, everyone, for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. Always good to have you with us. Hope you'll stay tuned. Latest world news, it's straight ahead. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Chaz Hall, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We hope you have a great Monday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
June 20th is World Refugee Day, a time to acknowledge the resilience, courage, and perseverance of the millions of people driven from their homes. According to the 1951 Convention on the Status of Refugees, a refugee is someone who, owing to a well-founded fear of being persecuted for reasons of race, religion, nationality, membership of a particular social group or political opinion, is outside the country of his nationality and is unable to, or owing to such fear, is unwilling to avail himself of the protection of that country. Today, according to UNHCR estimates, more than 20 million people around the world meet that definition. Many of them flee their homeland to escape violent conflicts or belligerent extremists. Some are escaping human rights violations perpetrated by government entities or private militias. Most often, people are running because their hometowns have been turned into battlefields, and staying means nearly certain death. They run from Syria, where the government is killing its civilian population with bombs, bullets, and poison gas, from Libya, where civilians are caught in conflict, from Afghanistan, where Taliban extremists are waging a war against the elected government by setting off bombs in markets and sending suicide bombers into populated areas, from Sudan, South Sudan, Somalia, Mali, Burma, and many other places. These refugees share important characteristics. They all have been displaced from homes, families, and communities. They all have experienced loss and face uncertain futures, and they all look to the rest of the world, to us, for support, for hope. This is a global crisis that is affecting more men, women, and children than ever before, and for protracted periods of time. In a time when so many refugees are fleeing violence and persecution, and nations around the world are struggling to cope with this massive influx of vulnerable people, it is time to remember that, in the words of UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, refugees are people like anyone else, like you and me. They led ordinary lives before becoming displaced, and their biggest dream is to be able to live normally again. On this World Refugee Day, let us recall our common humanity, celebrate tolerance and diversity, and open our hearts to refugees everywhere.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.